We were polar opposites, but we had the same values of putting God first, family second, and career third. And our picture is in the Mary Kay Museum from now until eternity.
Are you a career and family woman who's great at taking care of everyone except yourself? You'd like to get refilled, but there's just not enough time in the day? If so, you're in the right place, friend. I'm Amy Gustafson with How Leaders Replenish. Consider this your one-stop shop to enjoy some coffee talk with a gal pal, where we'll dig into replenishment, relationships, and fulfilling your life calling with God's grace, so you can be a better version of who you were made to be for the benefit of not just you, but everyone around you. Let's do this.
Today, I have Monique Balboa with me, and I'm excited for all of you to hear from her wisdom today. She is an independent national sales director emeritus with Mary Kay Cosmetics. And years ago, Monique came into my life, I think it was about 27 years ago, when I was actually in the Mary Kay company when I was in college. And I had a director who recruited me into the business, and Monique was a leader over her. And so through the course of time, I came to know her, and she has been an amazing mentor in my life. So Monique, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Amy. It's such a pleasure to be here. And I'm so honored that you would even consider asking me these questions. So I'm excited to be part of this podcast and excited to help your How Leaders Replenish when their moms and their wives and they're just juggling a million balls. So I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you of everyone know what this looks like, because I remember years ago, different things that you would do in the business. Now, just so you understand Monique's level, to become a national sales director in the Mary Kay Corporation, that is the upper echelon of the business. In fact, I was always in awe of her because she had multiple 5-carat diamonds that she had won. And she would go on these national sales director trips every year to amazing castles in Europe and things. And the company would pay and send her on these amazing, amazing trips where they would have a concierge to do whatever their bidding was. So I remember Monique, who was an amazing tennis player and pickleball now too. I remember you saying that you wanted to play tennis on Wimbledon courts, and your concierge made that happen for you, right?
They did. They did. It was a dream life. You know, it was a Cinderella life. Mary Kay's trips. Mary Kay always believed that she would give things that women dream about. And they're not always practical, because women are so practical, and we sacrifice everything for our family and our children and our husband, and we don't treat ourselves. So she always treated us. And I always felt like Cinderella on the trips, but then I'd come home and the next day I'm picking up dog poop like everybody else. So, you know, you get to go on these dream trips and then you come home to reality. And that's just the way life really is.
Well, one interesting thing about your background, a lot of times if people hear about a career in the makeup industry and things like that, sometimes they think that the person is really into makeup. And although Monique comes from a family, you have a sister that was a former Miss New Mexico, is that right?
Yes, yes, my sister Lisa.
And so you had a sister who was really into makeup, in fact, probably 7, because there were 7 girls in your family and 1 brother, correct?
8. I made 8. So made 8 girls and a boy. And I was the youngest.
So I remember you telling me when we first met that you went to college actually and earned your degree in engineering. Mm-hmm. And you said you would go out and be up on the high lines with the guys out there. And you said you were not into makeup whatsoever, but you chose that career route when your sister, who was into makeup, talked you into that just so you could have more time with your kids. Was that the reason why?
Yes. Just a little thing. You know, those of you listening, Amy loves me so much. And she will make me sound better than I really am. But I did graduate with a degree actually in poli sci and a minor in the engineering field, because I transferred from the United States Military Academy at West Point. And Motorola was my company, and they trained me to do the field work. So yes, I used to be on towers and poles and do all those sorts of things. My sister Lisa was my recruiter, and she was Miss New Mexico. And she was a cheerleader, and she was a homecoming queen of her college, and she was beautiful and lived in LA, and I lived in Colorado, and I was an earth woman, and I didn't wear makeup, and my hair was long and straight, which nothing's wrong with long and straight hair, and I was the only woman, there's 2 other women in our all-male office. So I was a tomboy my whole life, and Lisa was beautiful. She's in heaven now and is even more beautiful in heaven, but we were polar opposites, but we had the same values of putting God first, family second, and career third. And she saw that desire in me that I wanted that because I was pregnant with my first baby when she recruited me. And she led me to a place where I could thrive in Mary Kay within my own skin and my own personality, and I didn't have to be like her. So we both actually became national sales directors, and Lisa and I were the first two sister national sales directors in the history of the company, and our picture is in the Mary Kay Museum from now until eternity. It's an honor.
Well, you have been an amazing mentor in my life, so I am so grateful for the wisdom that you've spoken into me over the years, and I'm excited for everyone to partake of that today. I remember as you were working on everything with all of the travel that your career involved, you had certain parameters you would put into place to make sure that you were having time for your husband and your three daughters. So what were some of the things you did to make all of that work?
I think the main thing when you are trying to harmonize is the word I use. I don't use balance. I think balance is an elusive concept. And if you're a listener today, I think you need to use the word harmony. And harmony means that your needs are met, your children's needs are met, your husband's needs are met, that one isn't sacrificing more than the other, that it's harmonious. It still might be crazy, but it's harmonious because you can't be perfect. Only Jesus Christ is perfect. And we as women try to be perfect, and it's putting so much pressure on us. So being self-employed, and I can only speak from a self-employment position because when I was full-time and working 45 hours a week, I didn't have balance or harmony, because it was really hard under the structure of a corporate job. But now with COVID and people working from home, and you guys get to work remotely, and things have changed, and the corporate world has softened in that area, then I think you can make statements and demands and make your own life the way you want it to be. What is it? Customize your plan. And I think your corporations will start listening. And I think if you're self-employed, you definitely have that. So I became a master at time management. And in building my business, I chose to work only Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So first, I chose my work week. So many times, Amy, people say, I want to be a lawyer and a doctor, and they think the money, or they think this, or they think that, but they don't think of what do I want my career to look like? Do I want to travel? Do I want to have time with my children? Do I want to be surrounded by amazing women or men who have integrity and character? They don't think of the things they really want. They think of the career first, and then they try to change the career to match their belief system, and it doesn't work that way. So I challenge you to write down what your dream career would be in every aspect of traveling, time with children, time for yourself, time with that, and then what career might match your desires. Maybe that's a way to do it. So I took the Mary Kay career, and I worked Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and I worked 10-hour days. Now, yes, I still had daycare. I never said I did it without daycare. I had daycare on those days. The difference is I would drop them off at 8:30 or 9, which wasn't 7 in the morning, and I would pick them up around 5:30. But I was home working, so I could start dinner in a crock pot so they could come home for dinner. We'd have dinner every night. That was super important to me. And then I would work that night from 7 to 10. And then I would take off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, because in the corporate world, I was worthless on Fridays. It's Friday. I wasn't productive. And Sunday night, I was like, oh, I have to go back to work. So I just said I was never going to work a Friday or a Monday again. So you take your time and you design it what works for you. If you're better to do a little bit every day, good. But I'm an all or nothing. I'm either 100% in or I'm not when I'm doing it. So for me to have three 10-hour days was easier than to have 5 days that were 6 hours. So that's how it worked for me. So then on the days I didn't work, on Mondays and Fridays, I worked in their classrooms. I did my grocery shopping. I did my laundry. I did all the things that I didn't do on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, which was none other than feeding them their meals. And then I caught up on that on the days I didn't work. I think becoming a master scheduler is it. My kids all played sports when they got older and I had to drive them. They all played high school sports. They were state championships in their sports. And I sat down and talked to them and I said, okay, you guys have 3 games this week. Mommy can make 2 games, but I can't make all 3. And they were okay with that because we talked through it because they understood our goals, but they also understood that I couldn't be at all of those games and still run a business, but I didn't miss them all. I think first becoming a master scheduler is number one, prioritizing what's important to you. Money is not what you go after. It's the quality of living. Everybody used to say when I tried to recruit them in Mary Kay, I said, well, what do you currently earn and What do you want to make? And they would always triple their income. And they had this unrealistic goal that I want to make it in a year. And I said, well, this isn't a get rich quick scheme. And it's that short range sacrifice for the long range goal. So as you are working towards this dream calendar, if you're a mom listening here, you have to make some sacrifices in order to put in what's really important to you. And only you know what those sacrifices are. And for me, it was sacrificing tennis and sports. I gave up tennis for 18 years and I ran instead in the morning before they all woke up. And I'm not a morning person. So in order to have the schedule I wanted, I had to do it early before they woke up. And I had to sacrifice tennis for that period of time because tennis is, you got to shower afterwards. It took 2 hours. There wasn't time to do that, but I still wanted to exercise. So that's maybe one of my sacrifices that I made to have the schedule that I wanted to have.
Now, what were some of the things that you did with your kids so that when you were home, you really built memories with them?
Oh gosh, what didn't we do? I do it now with my grandchildren. I think the main thing with children is they don't care what you're doing as long as you're doing something with them. There's a lot of pressure today because of Instagram and Facebook to do all these things, and they just want to be with you. So playing games, reading is a huge one. Just going to parks. I kind of combined work with pleasure sometimes. We had parks all over my city, and I would take them to a different park on the days off. And we'd bring a picnic and we'd be at lunch because I wanted to meet mommies at all these different parks for my business, but I also wanted them to go to the park. And so I combined those sorts of things. I did have my kids go grocery shopping. I did allow them to help me do things like that because they thought it was fun. We did tea time every Friday. We would decorate, we'd set the table up for tea because I grew up with a Victorian grandmother. And when my youngest was too young for school, she would set the Friday tea table and we'd have tea time. And they love tea time to this day. All three of my children are teaaholics and love tea time and tea parties. We would do the zoo. We would watch a movie that was approved. And we didn't have theaters back then and all this stuff that people have in their houses. So we would hang a sheet over the window and we'd pick a movie. And we didn't have big screens back then, but they didn't know. And we'd have something we never had, like popcorn. And they might have chocolate milk or something. And we'd make a movie day. And it was just silly things. And I have my grandkids, three of them, every Thursday. I only have a basket of toys that were my kids. I have Operation, I have Twister, I have Trouble, I have Monopoly. I have a basket full of toys and one's got the potato head. My five-year-old grandson, every time they come over here, they take all the toys out. They have zillions of toys at their house, but this is all they have at Grandma Meek's. And he played with potato head for over an hour and a half and kept showing us all the things. He would never play with potato head. So my point was that it's not what you have. It's the time that you're doing. So we do crafts. I did crafts with my kids and I'm craft impaired, but we do some crafts or we'd go to a place where we did crafts. We would go on walks. We go foraging. We make fairy places and we'd go find things in nature for the fairies. So it's not hard. We think it has to be creative. Take them to an arcade, and nothing's wrong with arcade and those things, but I didn't have the money for that. And so we just did free. What's free? You know, there's free stuff out there all the time. Does that help?
Yes. You know, I think it's amazing because I remember you told me that your parents divorced when you were little and you were raised by your military father from the age of three. And so I remember you saying that your upbringing was kind of like military boot camp for all of you kids. And you are in many ways just a huge role model to me for your parenting skills, because I remember before I ever had kids, things that you would say that you were doing every week with your kids. And I thought, wow, how do you have this $1 million business and you have all of these people that you're helping in your business? And then you're building all these memories constantly with your kids. I remember one other thing you told me was that you created a hope chest for each of your daughters before they got married. And anytime you traveled, you would buy a special thing for their hope chest that you were going to give them when they got married. What were some of the things you put in that?
Well, I just gave, my youngest just got married and she just got hers. It was more antique-y things around tea. I love antiquing. And I've been to 32 countries and I would go into antique stores in other countries or gosh, I learned how to find things at Goodwill. And when I was young and poor, I found great things at Goodwill because I was trained well by my grandmother. And I bought silver things. They have each have a silver tea service because they love tea. linens, beautiful antique linens for their table, antique napkins that match the linens, serving pieces. One was just the I'm Special plate, which wasn't an antique, but every time someone had a birthday, we put out the I'm Special plate, or if they achieved something really important, one child got the I'm Special plate and everyone had to go around the table and say why their sister was special. And that was always funny because my middle daughter, Stephanie, wasn't fond of her little sister. And one time it was the little sister's I'm Special plate and Stephanie couldn't think of anything to say about her. So I said, okay, go to your room and you can come back down to dinner when you think of something special about your sister. And she came down and she goes, fine, she's cute. I'm like, okay, that'll count. I mean, she couldn't say anything special about her sister. So the I'm Special plate, they each got one for their future family. A pickle to hang on the Christmas tree was in there. So you hang a pickle on the tree and whoever finds it, it's good luck. I mean, just things to start their life, but mostly serving pieces that generation might not register for at all anymore, so that they could do a beautiful table for tea because they love tea so much. So things like that. I always had to buy everything in threes because I wanted everything to be fair. So, you know, one child is 7 years older than the other. And when I just gave Erin hers, she had those things in it and she just giggled.
Didn't you tell me once that you had a tradition every Christmas where you would all get together and read a specific Christmas storybook?
Yeah, under my tree is The Gift of the Magi. Also under my tree every year was The Polar Express. And also under the tree is The Night Before Christmas. So those three books, we would read them every year. And this year, what I'm doing for my family and my grandchildren, instead of buying presents, we're going to the Polar Express. So I have 13 of us going to the Polar Express, and I bought everybody matching pajamas, which my son-in-laws are 6'5", 6'5", and 6'3", and they're going to all be wearing these. Mm-hmm. We're going to the actual Polar Express because now I believe in experiences instead of stuff. My kids, if they got 4 Barbie dolls for birthday parties, they had to bring back 3 or give them away because I just thought it was just overabundance.
I understand. And that is definitely true. I think with the experiences and building the memories, there's just mm-hmm. so much more meaning to that than just having more things. Obviously, you're retired now recently, but when you were in the thick of your career, what would you say were some of the biggest challenges you went through finding that harmonious place?
I think forgetting about myself. Okay. That was the biggest challenge. I never forgot about my kids. You know, when they had homecomings, they never had their fingernails or toenails done or their hair done professionally because I thought if I did this when they were young, what treat are they going to have when they're older? I didn't want to spoil them. But when homecoming or prom came, I said, you can either have your toenails done, your fingernails done, or your hair nails, only one. And then because of Mary Kay, you know, I had a lot of people who could do things and I could paint their toenails and fingernails. So I think my biggest challenge was to remember to take time for myself. When my kids were in high school, I would take them to lunch once a week because they didn't want you there. In middle school, I would go to lunch once a week and sit with their friends around the table. And in grade school, I also did the same thing and worked in the classroom. So I made sure that everything was pretty fair with them. So I think my biggest challenge was me because my kids really didn't have a lot of issues. One of my daughters had struggled in math, and I'm really good at math, but it was calculus and I could get the answer, but I couldn't tell her how to get the answer. So I had to hire a tutor, and that was hard for me to relinquish control, actually, you know, explaining to them why, you know, I didn't want them to go to parties and all the normal things of talking about alcohol and talking about the things that can happen in high school. I think it wasn't hard for me to have the discussions. I'm very open. It was hard in the beginning to trust, but if you don't trust and let them go, then they're going to try to do it behind your back. So maybe it's hard to trust, but that trust, I remember my oldest daughter, Whitney, saying, Mom, because you're so open and you trusted me so much, it made me not want to do any of those things. I had no need to do them. Mm-hmm. And one of my daughters said, Mom, I think discipline is necessary. She was in grade school. She would go to her dad's mm-hmm. and she goes, Mom, I need disciplining and Dad doesn't discipline me. I said, well, tell him. And she understood that discipline, if done correctly, means love. And she was only in grade school. And so I think a challenge for a parent is what does discipline look like and being consistent in that discipline. But I think if I go back to your original question, I think it's to remember me.
And did you ever find a way to do that especially? Or do you feel like throughout your career, that's an area that was a constant struggle?
the way I replenished myself is I did a Bible study. And to this day, I do it. I purposely did it on a Wednesday morning, which was one of my work days. And I wanted it to be morning because I felt it was decadent to do it in the morning. And I wanted it to have homework because I found that if I did it that way, then that was replenishing me. So I think Bible study was fun for me. Being around women outside of Mary Kay was fun for me. And then having quiet time, learning to have quiet time was for me. And quiet time doesn't always mean at 5 a.m. Sometimes it's just my car. The other thing I did for myself was running. I did running and I did bodybuilding in my late 30s. So fitness was important for me. And then I also always, once a month, had girlfriend time with somebody actually outside of Mary Kay, not because my Mary Kay friends weren't important to me. It was just that I wanted somebody that didn't ask me about Mary Kay all the time and they can't help themselves. So those are the things I did for me.
Tell me if I'm correct. Do I remember that years ago, one of your daughters had a pretty serious illness?
Whitney.
Mm-hmm. How did you get through work during that time? And just tell a little bit about what happened there.
That's a great question, Amy. That's the beauty of being able to design your work around your priorities. And that's what I was trying to say in the beginning. The job conforms to you. So Whitney was diagnosed with chronic osteomyelitis, but she had a growth. She was 12 and she had a growth on her tibia. And they kept telling me that it was a bone spur or something. And, you know, moms know. And I go, you're wrong. And she couldn't sleep at night. It was painful and it just kept growing bigger and bigger. So finally, one doctor took him and he immediately said in front of me, your daughter has bone cancer and you need to go to the hospital right now. And so I called her dad. He met me there. And while I was sitting in there while she was getting diagnosed, I thought, all right, I have to put my business on hold. Someone's going to have to take over my means. Da, 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 da. But I could sit there and design my life around taking care of this child. That bone cancer is usually terminal, you know, those spots that go through your head. So what ended up happening is it was a misdiagnosis, praise the Lord, and it was osteomyelitis. But she was like a cancer patient and had to have a PICC line in her arm, and she had to have treatments 3 times a day. And so what I did is her room became like a hospital room. She was in sixth grade, and her friends, they graduated her early because she was a straight-A student, and I readjusted my schedule. And my women that I had the privilege of training, I said, everything will be done at my home. You can come here and I'll do career chat interviews for you. I will do my facials here. And when I told people this, I just said, I have a daughter who has to have special treatments and I do everything in my home. And so you'd have to come to my home. If that works for you, I'd love it. And I worked everything around her, everything. And we had our 2 best years ever in Mary Kay. And I didn't even barely leave my house. And then when Whitney got stronger and could leave the house, I made sure that we did fun things. She couldn't play soccer anymore. So I entered her in art classes and painting classes. And she's an incredible pencil drawer and she loves art. And we would never have discovered that had she not gotten sick because she was a soccer player. They told her she'd never play soccer again. And she played at the Division I level, which is where she met Amy and Sean in Texas. So I think adjusting my schedule. Also, when I was a breastfeeding mom, I told them, I would meet women at restaurants. I said, I have a baby at home and I breastfeed and I will bring her with and breastfeed in front of you. So if that's offensive, then we'll have to schedule it another time. And all the women said no. And my kids are really quiet breastfeeders and I could do a Mary Kay interview breastfeeding because I just said, hey, it's not the most professional, but this is what's important to me. And if this is the time you want, this baby's with me. And that's what I did because it was my business. So I always just adjusted. And Whitney was, she had this osteomyelitis for almost 2 years. And so it was a 2-year commitment, but it worked out great. It worked out great. And that changed who she was. She was so thankful to the Lord. She became closer to God. She was a stronger young woman. I mean, that was a very important time for her to go to. And it was very important for me to go to learn really how we can be successful at the same time and putting our priorities in line and not feeling you have to sacrifice your core beliefs.
That's beautiful. As you look back on your career, are there any burnout seasons you specifically remember and how you overcame those?
And that's a good question. Burnout became a word in, I don't know, maybe the 90s that got too much emphasis and the enemy took hold of that. women kept saying burnout. And I don't know if it was burnout other than the inability to manage your time and take control and learning to say no. No is a complete sentence. I went to counseling to learn to say no. And he goes, no is a complete sentence. And he said, you don't have to give them the explanation. If someone asks you to do something, you don't say no because I have to do this. And they don't really care your reason. You just say, no, it doesn't work into my schedule right now. So I think burnout happens when we can't say no and we spread ourselves too thin. And sometimes burnout is because of what we put on our plate. Like I had a season where I was doing the three-year-olds at church and I was so busy. And I went to my pastor and finally said, I am so stressed by this. Cause then I was going to two church services, one that I watched the kids and then to hear the service. And he said, Monique, first of all, God doesn't want you doing this with resentment. And this might not be the time that you do that. You might serve later when you don't have three little kids of your own at home and you don't have all these things. And he gave me permission. He goes, and when you step down from this, it will give someone else a time to shine and a place to shine. And so giving me permission to say no to things. So I think burnout happens when we don't give ourselves permission to say no and when we're trying to be the perfect mom. But if I did experience burnout, which I would say was in my 30s, because I was trying to be Wonder Woman for a while, it wasn't ever the Mary Kay business. It was me trying to have the perfect house. And, you know, I started sewing Halloween costumes. I am not a sewer, but I wanted to be that mom that sewed, you know? And so a lot of my burnout, if you will use that word, was because I was trying to be somebody I was not so that everybody else thought I was better than I was, if that makes sense. And so I never had what the world was saying burnout in my business because I was really good at mentoring that. And I was really good at saying no. And on my newsletter, you don't even remember this, but in the corner, it said Monique's work hours, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, does not receive phone calls, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Mondays, will return calls on Mondays. And I had that in my return thing. So people would leave me messages and say, Monique, I know it's a Friday and you're not going to call me back till Tuesday, but I had to let you know this. And they honored it because I honored it. What happens is we give people boundaries, but we don't honor them ourselves. And if you give someone an inch, they'll take a yard. And so when I would travel, say, Amy, to see you or to see your mom, and I was gone 3 days, then I took off 3 days the next week. I harmonized that in my return so that it just made me feel better. So I think I didn't experience that. I experienced it because I was trying to be the everything mom. And here's one more story, and I'll tell you why. And so, you know, you get picked to bring something for the school party or it's their birthday, but this was a Halloween party. And I made these cat cookies like at 1 a.m. and you had to cut them out because this is the time where I was trying to be the great mom and I'm not. I rolled out the cookies. I cooked them. The cat expanded and it didn't look like a cat anymore because it, you know, puffed up. So then I had to paint the face. And so then that took another, I mean, I probably went to bed at 3 o'clock for these cat cookies for Halloween for third graders. So we're at the party and this little boy drops his cookie and he goes, Mommy, I dropped my cookie. And it happened to be the ones I made. And she goes, oh, just throw it away. And I got him hysterical and I scared the kid. And the mom like looked at me, what's wrong with you? Because I had knew everything that went into that silly cookie. And I was probably short on sleep. And I just said, okay, not again. They don't care if you buy donut holes. They don't care if you buy them. You don't have to make everything yourself. So for me, burnout was more in learning how to say no to the things that did not serve me well.
That is $1 million advice there, for sure.
Oh, good. That was it.
I think you might have been the one years ago who said to me, Amy, if you can't fit everything in one day, it means that you're doing things in your schedule that God hasn't asked you to do.
Amen. I might not have said it that eloquently, but I said that a lot.
And it is so true. I love that. It's really not burnout. It's just knowing how to prioritize your time and say no to what you need to say no to.
Know that no is healthy. It's a healthy thing. People aren't going to love you any less.
And you really can lay out your schedule of everything you're doing and start praying over it. Lord, show me what I'm doing that I'm not supposed to be. And I believe he will illuminate those things to you that you'll just know in your heart, this is something I could let go of, but you know, this I need to keep. The Lord will direct you even when you lift that before him.
Oh, and I think procrastination is a sign of God. You're procrastinating on things you don't like to do. Now, I'm not saying don't clean your dishes and stuff, but I don't like cutting out cookies. And so you procrastinate until the last night. I shouldn't have waited till the last night. And that was a sign that I shouldn't have been doing that, but I didn't listen because I wanted to be the perfect mom, you know?
As far as your career, is there anything that was especially helpful to you anywhere along from growing up with your dad, your time at West Point, your time in college, all throughout your Mary Kay career? Anything that especially stands out to you as some of the best training you had or something that especially helped you become who you are today?
Yes, definitely. Time management. Time management is taught. So remember, you can teach yourself time management. My father used to say P to the fifth power, which meant prior preparation prevents poor performance. That's so military. But it's prepping. It's, you know, when you're going on a trip and you're packing, you can open up your suitcase and pack for a week. You don't have to wait an hour before your flight to do those sorts of things. You can just keep throwing things in there. So the things that I learned was time management. And as a young mom, you know, my phone is not enough space. And I also have a paper date book still, but I used to have the desk calendar and I had one on my desk and I hung one in my laundry room. And I needed to see things big. So one of the things that I learned is how to prioritize time by knowing what time is already taken. So for working moms and working women, I would take that big desk calendar and I would go through all my kids' schedules of their sports and I'd fill it out from January to December. Everything I pre-knew, if there was a wedding, if there was a doctor's appointment, if there was a basketball game, if there was practice, what was my schedule, everything I pre-knew that year, I had it on there so that I knew what was open. And then on the days I didn't work, I had that highlighted. So I highlighted things. Yellow was fun time, representing the sun. Green was work time, that meant money. Blue was spiritual time, that meant God. And pink was Mary Kay time. And so you'd look at my calendar, and my kids would look at the calendar and everything, and they would see all that, those colors. Also, what helped is having my kids' schedule on this big thing. They could go there and see when their game was to see. They didn't have to come and go, Mommy, when's my game? I would say, go look at the calendar. So they quit asking me those questions. It also helped them take responsibility if somebody called my house and it was a friend. And you know, sometimes women do this. Well, do you know if your mommy's free next week? Because I'm just calling to see if she wants to do this. And they go, well, just a minute. Let me go look at the calendar because my calendar was there. And they could say, hey, we're looking at the calendar and my mommy's busy. So they knew it. So I think what I learned was time management was key so I could be freed up, you know, and even on the calendar on Fridays, I'd put groceries, I'd write everything on there. And I didn't, like if someone asked me to do a facial on a Friday in Mary Kay, I said, no, I don't work on Fridays. Because if you started letting somebody in, then you would do again and again and again, and you'd start making an exception and an exception and an exception. And I didn't want to get in the habit of making an exception. So luckily in my business, I could give someone else that appointment, but I had to say that one appointment is not going to make or break me. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to book myself on the Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays as best as I can. And God will take care of the rest because I'm honoring him by this schedule and this life. I did sacrifice maybe being the top person in my career, Amy, because it was a choice. I didn't want to work 5 days a week. I knew if I did that, then I'd sacrifice things that made priorities. So I could have been even higher up than I was, but there would have had to be a trade. And I knew that. And I didn't blame it on anybody. It's just the nature of the beast. So I wasn't ever resentful that I wasn't the best of the best, but I was up there with the best because I was unwilling to do what they were willing to do. And so you have to be at peace with your willingness, because you can take a willing person and make them capable, but you can't always take a capable person and make them willing. So I knew my willingness. I knew my parameters and I knew how high I would go with that. And actually you become more efficient with the less time you have because you get better and better at what you're doing when you compact it than when you drag it out. So I got better and better. And I didn't work more hours, but I moved up because my skills got sharper and sharper.
That makes sense. Having your daughters in the home, did you hire a housekeeper or did you have them help with chores throughout the home? What did that look like? I've had some moms say to me, I feel like I'm doing my kids a disservice because I don't have them help around the house. I've had some moms say they've grown up and now they have their own place and it's always a mess because I never taught them how to clean. And yet there's the thing with the kids being in sports and how do they have time for that or other activities. So just curious your thoughts on that.
So here's my rules. I grew up without a housekeeper, but we had 9 kids and we got an allowance. So my kids got an allowance, but I did have a housekeeper. I had an 8,200 square foot house. I did not expect my kids to clean the whole house. What I expected of them was to clean their own room. I expected them to fold their own laundry and they cleared the table for dinner and they helped with dishes and they got paid for that. They did not clean toilets. They did not dust the house. They did not vacuum. They did not do that. And their rooms had to be cleaned every Sunday or picked up. I didn't care during the week if they were crazy, but every Sunday before they started the new week, they had to be picked up. So you have to have your parameters of what they do. My kids knew how to fold. You know, I would do the laundry because I didn't trust them with the hot water and the cold water, but you can even teach them how to do their own laundry. Laundry wasn't hard. Folding, I'd fold it all wonderful, and then they would just stuff it in the drawers anyway. So I finally decided they can fold their own laundry. They had to make their bed every day. That was a big thing. Making their beds, folding their laundry, doing dishes after dinner. I felt like since I did dinner and I did the meals, they had to clear their, and I see my little grandchildren, they clear their table. They were like one, and I'm like, their dish is going to break. But my kids have passed that on. They don't load the dishwasher yet because they're too little, but they eventually will. But they take their plate and they do that. And then they will start doing dishes too. So it was a limited amount of chores, and then they got an allowance for that. Now, this is what I did when they were little. Their allowance was a set amount, but I would say, okay, if you are disobedient, you're going to lose a quarter of your allowance. And they understood that. So I'd give them their, let's say their $3 of allowance in cash. I said, but you disobeyed 3 times. So now give me back 3 times that is 75 cents. So they had to learn to get, so they gave them the money and then they had to give it back. And they felt the pain more because instead of me just giving them the allowance with the deduction, I gave them the full amount and then they had to pay me back for every time they were bad. And that was powerful. And so they also were more obedient because of that, like whether they didn't fold their laundry or whether they didn't do this.
I think the reason that worked is you made the comment that you purpose not to overbuy for your children and not to spoil them. So they really valued the money they received.
Yes. And they would use their allowance. They could go use their allowance and I would take them shopping for what they wanted to use their allowance for. But they saw giving it back was harder than getting it, mm-hmm. You know, and they had to be accountable. Well, no, I said, let mommy wrote this down. This is what you did. Did you do that or did you not do that? I go, yeah, I did that. Okay. And I reminded you when you were doing that you were going to lose your allowance. And you said, fine. So that's what's happening. So you got to pay me back, you know, and it was a concept. The other thing is when they were little, if you have real little kids, now you probably can use different things. But I used to take one of those clear plastic slip things and I made on a thing, a chart, and we taped it near their sink, brushing their teeth, brushing their hair, changing their underpants, whatever. And every morning, they could check it up. It's a marker. And they would, I brush my teeth. I brush my hair because they come down. Moms go, did you brush your teeth? Did you do your hair? Did you change? And you're repeating yourself. And I didn't want to repeat myself all the time. So I could go up and look at what they checked or didn't check and see what they did or didn't do. And I said sometimes, because I could tell they didn't brush their hair, did you brush your hair? Uh-huh. I go, well, I'm going to go check your chart. Okay, let me go back up there. Because they knew they didn't. And they knew they would see that they didn't do that. So that kind of helped with little kids is that they could take responsibility and check that they did those things. And I think I learned that from somebody else. So chores, you want to teach them to be strong enough to go off into the real world. I have found, though, I will tell you that in college, my kids' rooms weren't that clean, but they did all their own laundry and they did all those things. But they did also complain about their roommates not being so clean. And when they got their own homes, they actually owned their own home. My 3 kids are so organized and put together. So when they had ownership of it, their whole personality changed versus being in a dorm room.
Another thing you did really well with your kids is that you taught them about vision setting. And I remember you telling me once that you would have everyone in your family take like a construction sheet of paper or something, and everyone would cut out pictures and write words below it of what they were believing for to happen in their lives in the next year. And then you would go and laminate that, and that would be everyone's breakfast placemat.
You have such a great memory. Those are called goal placemats. And how that came about is it's something I created in Mary Kay because we do goal posters, but you put it in your office or behind a door, and people weren't seeing them frequently enough. So I decided to make gold placemat. So they would eat off their goals every day. I had always had my goal placemat, and it had categories of your spiritual goals, your personal goals, your business goals, your financial goals, all those quadrants of the circle was in my goal placemat. And my kids had at that time like 101 Dalmatian placemats. And they had a little friend over for dinner. And the little friend noticed that everyone had a placemat, but mine was different. And so she asked about it. And my oldest daughter, Whitney, answered the question, goes, oh, that's my mommy's goal placemat. And she lifted it up and she recited all my goals to this little girl at the table. And she had understood them because she learned me saying them. So it made me think, do you want a goal placemat? And my kids go, yeah, we want to make those. And so you just get magazines and you would cut out pictures and words, or I'd have to write some of them for them. And so we started with our first goal placemats, and I would take them to a store and get them laminated. And I remember Stephanie's this particular year, and I've told this story many times, where she had a bed made real neatly, and she had a swing set, and she had a puppy. I don't remember the other thing it was. There was like only four things. And I said, well, and then you have to tell out loud what it means. So it was her turn to raise her goal placemat. I said, well, honey, what does the bed mean? She goes, I want to make a better bed. Okay. The swing set represented I want to play more. The puppy represented I wanted a puppy, obviously. And so they got to eat off of that. So we decided everyone put a puppy on their placemat that year because they collaborated, and they also put Disney World that particular year. So I said, okay, for an entire year, you have to show me puppy responsibility, because I knew if we got a puppy, who's going to take care of it? I am. And so one time we had a storm. I lived in my first house, right behind me was a park, and I could sit on my deck and see him right there because there was nothing behind me but the park. And so I would be on my deck having a cup of tea and watching them at the park. And it started raining. So I had a whistle. I blew the whistle, time to come back in. And Stephanie comes running in, and I go, where's your little sister? Oh, I forgot. And I said, well, what if it was a puppy? And she goes, oh, I would have remembered the puppy. And so I had to go back, and I found Erin was underneath the slide because it was raining, and I could see her from a thing, but her sister left her. So we talked, okay, that's not puppy responsibility. So the goal placemats really helped, and they would make them every year. They were for a year. And as they matured in life, of course, when they got to high school, they didn't get as much fun out of them as they did, but they made goal posters. So they learned. I continued to make my goal placemats, but they didn't.
But that was very effective. I remember you telling me that they saw so many of the things manifest.
Oh, always. They always did. The Disney World made me accountable, because that year Mary Kay was offering a special trip to Disney World that directors could win. And it was really hard to win. And because they kept telling everybody in front of me who came over, and we're going to Disney World this year, we're going to Disney World, I won the trip. And my sister Lisa also won the trip. But we found out later that only like 1% of the people won the trip. But we didn't know any better because my kids made me so accountable because it was on their goal placemat.
We should probably wrap up here soon, but I just love listening to you talk, especially about your parenting stories, because you are such a wonderful mother. So last question for you, if you could go back and talk to the 20 or 25 year old you, what would you tell the younger version of you that would have helped you in your journey?
I wish I would have been stronger in my faith. I was raised a Catholic, and nothing against Catholics, but I had a misunderstanding of God. And so my advice would be to marry equally yoked. Don't marry someone thinking you're going to change them, because I did, and thought I would bring him to Christ, and work on it our whole marriage. And his three children love the Lord, and they married equally yoked. But I would say to my younger self, understand what that really means. I loved my husband. I loved my three children, but it was very, very difficult to be the only spiritual leader in the household. So I'd say to my 20 self, don't even entertain the idea. Don't even toy with the idea of marrying somebody that's not equally yoked. And I know that's hard, but don't. The other thing I'd say to my younger self is it's highly overrated to be Wonder Woman. It's highly overrated. No one's grading me for my cupcakes, and no one's grading me for my making Halloween costumes, and no one's grading me for having my house look like nobody lives in it. So learn to live in an environment that's healthy and clean, but not anally pristine and perfect because you think that's going to make people respect you more or think you're more amazing. I had a statement from a neighbor one time who told me that every time she came into my house, and this is her own insecurities, but it made her feel insecure because everything was always so put together. I'm not saying be sloppy or anything, but I think I wasn't doing it for the right reasons. It was for an impression instead of for, I don't even know, you know, heaven forbid there's, you know, dog hair on something. I was just like always vacuuming. It was silly. The other thing I would say to myself is seek spiritual mentorship and counseling younger. Don't wait for a catastrophe. You know, counseling isn't just for when things are bad. It's a tune-up. And, you know, Sean and Amy hold this amazing marriage ministry. And to dive into that young in your marriage, young in situations, and not wait till things get so bad that it can't be fixed or someone's unwilling to fix it. And to understand that it's not a negative word. Going to counseling is not a stigma. It's a good thing. It's a tune-up. You go and you get your car tuned up, you get your oil changed, you get your windshield wiper thing. This is the same thing. You need a tune-up sometimes in a good marriage to make it great again. It doesn't have to be bad. So my advice to my younger self would be to do that with or without your partner. With your partner is better, but to do it and not think it's a bad thing. I used to think, oh, it's a bad thing. I don't want people to think I need counseling. To marry equally yoked and to not try to be Wonder Woman.
I love that. Well, thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today. It has been wonderful visiting with you, Monique.
And I love you, Amy. And thank you for thinking I have wisdom. And those of you, when you become grandmas, you can apply a lot of that same principles. However, I do follow my children's rules. So just advice to grandmothers is that my grandchildren aren't allowed to have a lot of sugar. They eat this, they eat that. And so each of my children have a different rule in their house. And I don't impose my rules on them. I follow their rules. Because they're the leader of their household, they're the mothers, and I don't impose my motherhood on my grandchildren. I do what my children want. So that's my advice there. It'll help to create a lot of animosity, and it's not a good thing.
That's good advice. Thank you again, Monique, for being
here. You're welcome.
Thanks for being with me today. If you enjoyed this, would you do me a big favor and take a moment to leave a review to help other professional women and moms find our podcast too? I would appreciate it so much. Also, if you have a question you'd like answered, there's a tab for you to leave a voicemail on our website, and yours might be one of them chosen to be played on the podcast in the future. I pray you have an amazing week and look forward to visiting with you next time.